Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Listen and grow as Del questions the status quo, encourages you to think differently, and empowers you to make a better life. Get ready as Del challenges core beliefs, seeks the truth, and reveals the roadmap to the lifestyle you really want. And now your host, multi-millionaire, national award-winning investor, CEO and founder of Lifestyles Unlimited, Del Walmsley.
Welcome to Del Walmsley Radio Show, where the hype ends and the help begins. I'm your host, Del Walmsley, and with me here today on Telltale Tuesday is Zach Elliott out of San Antonio, Texas. Zach, welcome to the program.
Hey, good morning, Del. How are you?
Great. How long have you been a member, Zach?
Since 2016, so I guess almost this year will be 10 years. Wow.
10 years. What a story. Well, we want to let the people that are listening here today to get a little sense of that story. So let's start way back at the beginning. What drove you to look into real estate investing and then ultimately us?
That's a great question. You know, I think at that point, I had a young family and what was a good job as an engineer in oil and gas, and had kind of made to a more senior contributor position on the edge of, you know, eyeing the next or kind of lower level of management, you know, seeing what's ahead of me. And I realized that, you know, my compensation was great, but they often have these attractive 401k matches or delayed compensation programs, which are great benefits, but they were often, by the time they vest, you know, you're kind of the subject to your company's stock market performance or the price of oil. And so I realized that some of those, that compensation was out of my control. And so learned more about the benefits of real estate. And I also had a friend that was involved with Lifestyles Unlimited and had been for several years and had been telling me about it. And I had just at that time when I was younger, I didn't have the funds to really do a lot in real estate and was more focused on work and grinding. And anyway, so I realized that some of those benefits with my employment and compensation by the time they vest may be 10% or half of what they should have been when they were awarded, and it wasn't as great a deal as I'd anticipated. So I was looking for something else.
How old were you when you first started thinking about this kind of stuff?
I guess I was about probably 28, around there, yeah.
Do you think that that was young to have this type of dissatisfaction, or do you think that's pretty average?
Maybe a little young. I guess it kind of, for me, it was more of where I was at in my career. You know, I'd worked hard to, served in the military and I had a graduate education and got my engineer's license and finally got a job that was paying pretty well. And most of my effort at that point had been focused on that. And then finally, once you get there, you look ahead, you realize, well, this is good. I do like my job and, has great benefits and everything. But then you realize that still may not be enough to get me to where I wanted my family to be. I felt like I'd be on that treadmill forever. And also when you're with a big company like that, you realize that, companies downsize, they get purchased or they combine with other companies. And, regardless of your performance, you could always lose your job or be replaced. And so it's not, I needed something outside of that. So I think, once I got to that point in my career, I realized that finally kind of got to that first level goal that I had in my career and realized that maybe this won't work for the long term to get my family where I want them to be, you know.
I went through the same thing, and pretty much at the same age, I was working 12 hours a day, 6 days a week. And, you know, I didn't serve my country like you did. I just had a really long hour job. You know, 6 hours or 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, pretty high as far as hours. But I got to that point, the same thing. And that's why I ask you that question. If I got it in my 20s, late 20s, you got it in your late 20s. I retired by age 34. We're going to go on with your story here and see how you did it. But it's kind of like you wake up and go, you know, I've done everything they told me to do. I've got an education. You're like, you're an engineering guy. You went to the military. You served your country. You've done it all. You've got a family. Yeah, and I'm reiterating what you're saying so people really get it. It's really, you wake up and go, my gosh, I'm still not going to be one of those guys up there. You know, I'm not going to live at that level, no matter the fact that I did everything they told me to do. So I get that. What kind of a meeting did you come to the first time?
Yeah, it was one of the case studies at the time. And so, and in parallel with, at that point, I was driving a lot down south to the Eagle Ford Shale and driving a lot of windshield time around South Texas. And so I would listen to recordings of the radio show and anything I could find. And then eventually did the 2 day here in San Antonio. And I would also call and talk to my friend and ask him some questions about some of the things. And he's like, you just need to go to the 2 day, you know, because he probably got tired of my questions.
When you first came in for that case study thing, were you surprised how open people were with their information about finances?
Oh, absolutely. And it was, you know, as an engineering background, you know, I'm running numbers and like a kind of double checking the math and everything. And because honestly, when you just see the numbers up in front of you and everything, it simplifies it a little bit. You know, it takes the operate, you know, in your head, you think about the complication of operating a business or running a property. But when you can actually put it down into a number and put it up in front of people, it's amazing how much folks share, not just about their background, but are really open with their what's going on in their business and their property.
So when you went to the 2 day, you know, obviously you went to the case study and met all these people that were doing it and other people that were members and so forth. You then decided to go to the 2 day training. At the 2 day training, this is where the rubber hits the road. What type of aha moments did you get? Can you remember back 10 years from now and go, man, that's interesting. That's what makes this thing work. The aha moments, I think, are always the most interesting.
I think for me, it was that it was possible to, you go through the first day and it was mostly around single family. And at that point, just that where myself and my wife were, we weren't planning on doing single family, that I had a really busy job. And we had young children and just weren't interested in single family. But then after the first day of the 2 day, we start leaning in towards that. Well, hey, maybe this is actually if you do it right, you don't necessarily have to, it does not have to be all time consuming. If you follow the steps that are pointed out there and the coaching that the Lifestyles provides. And then we got to the second day and learned about the benefits of passive investing as a passive in apartment deals. And I knew that would be hands off. And so then got to know some of the folks that I met there who had done that successfully and confirmed that it really is very minimal time commitment. And so that really interested us. And so I was just surprised at how easy it is to get to know people who are doing deals and learn about them and gain some confidence in them. And it doesn't have to be a real big time consuming venture. Cause I didn't really, at that point, I didn't want another job. You know, I already had one, but I just needed somewhere, a different place for my money to work for me. And so it was possible to do that without me having to do a whole lot of work once you're in the deal. You know, the work is ahead of time to learn and find opportunities. But after that, there's not a lot of work to do.
Were you cognizant of that all the way back then that, hey, you got to make sure that just because I'm looking to do more financially, I don't want to destroy my life? Work-wise, time-wise?
Yeah, I knew that I didn't have that we only had so much time, and that I also didn't want my lifestyle, you know, the time commitments I had with my job, I didn't want to have to do I only had so many hours in the day left that I could do things. I didn't want things that were going to take further time away from my family. And so I think that's the biggest thing was the time.
What did you and the wife finally decide you would start with?
We decided multifamily. You know, we were fortunate that we had enough to do at least one or maybe two passive deals that we could, funds. And so we decided to do that. That would be, that's just the direction we wanted to go. So.
Okay. So you started not as a lead investor, but as a passive investor to start with?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So we got into a couple lead deals or a couple passive deals that first year after we took the 2 day and got to know some other lead investors based out of San Antonio.
Now, in doing so, I take it that didn't take a lot of your time. That didn't take you out of your quality of lifestyle from your family, right?
No, exactly. Yeah. It was, if anything, it gave me more hunger to continue to go to more networking events with Lifestyles and kind of sparked an interest in multifamily investing that I didn't really know I had up until that point. But
how did you decide which deals to get into?
I think some of it was timing based on when we had the funds ready. And if we knew, as we got to know some leads, we knew they were working on, you know, if they are doing, if they had a deal potentially coming up that that they're trying to win a deal until you already formed a relationship with that person. And so maybe they don't have a deal yet, but you've met them and talked with them and learned more about them or talked to other folks that may have invested with them. And then you kind of qualified the person, you know, the jockey, because then you know that, okay, they don't have a deal yet, but I would like to invest with that person or that person because I trust them and talk to other people that invest with them. And I like how they contribute to things in within our Lifestyles community. You know, you hear them maybe present their property or you hear them contributing in some of the discussions or some of the networking events, and you kind of form a relationship and build some confidence with folks. So that was one way. And then the other was maybe there are deals that you see that are opportunities that you couldn't get into or you didn't have the funds at the time, but you learn more about that particular market or submarket or area, knowing that, okay, maybe I don't have the funds right now, but I what I learned by listening to this investor presentation from someone else, you could kind of learn about submarkets. So all those things are helped me get comfortable with the lead investor, but then also the submarket.
So how long were you a passive investor per se? In other words, you were still more interested in that than actually doing the deals yourself. How many years?
It was over 3 years that we were passive investors, only passive investors. So it was 2019 that we got the first lead deal.
So let's kind of highlight, recap these passive deals. How many of them did you do in total?
Those first 3 years, I think it was six, I think almost two a year that we were able to get into. And then one of those first few that we were in sold, and that was kind of part of the funds for our first lead deal. You know, it was whenever recycling the capital from that first deal, you know, that it was either our first or second. I can't remember the exact timing now, but one of those had a pretty big windfall within, you know, 3 year time frame. And so we rolled that money over as a large chunk of our first lead deal.
That's interesting. So I'm going to ask you a two-part question here, but let's just start with, in that particular deal, how much money did you invest and how much did you pull out the back end of that deal?
So we put in $50,000, and then we had, I think it was just over $90,000 in less than 3 years, so is what we got back. So not quite double our money, but I think we were right at, maybe we did double our money when you look at the distributions we got.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
All right. So the second part of that question is, in totality of your passive investing, what kind of return did you make over those 6 years or whatever it was you were doing that in all six deals? I mean, all total. How many, by the way, have sold?
So we have, I think about, we've had six or seven deals sell, and then we're still in six as passives now. So we continue to do some passive investing, and some of those deals, the deals we got into those first 3 or 5 years, some of those have sold and we've recycled that capital into other deals. And, you know, most of them, that first 5 years, they would be between 6% and 8%, you know, cash on cash every quarter. And then I think the best deal, you know, tripled in about 5.5 years. And then the worst one was, I think, only like another 50% in 5 years or so, you know. So We're pretty fortunate. It was in hindsight, it was a really good time to be investing, you know, between 2016 and 2020.
No doubt. So let's talk in a larger scale. And I don't know how you want to approach this, because I'm not looking for exact numbers or anything like that, but just somebody's listening in here from the outside. All right. You had some X amount of money you put in. I don't know what that is into all these deals. I know some of it. Now you're turning it over, so you're doubling it and putting it back into some other deal. But let's start with the starting amount of net worth you had. And 6 years later, before you went into all the multifamily stuff that you became the lead investor in, what kind of net worth did you have? Did it go up 5%, 10%, 50%, 100% in those 6 years? What did your net worth do during that time?
Yeah, so that first 5 years, our net worth went up close to 50%. Again, that's also with my pay and compensation for my job also increased. So it allowed us to accelerate our investing a little bit, plus the success of those first deals. You know, it was kind of nice where if you can get into a deal or two a year, and, you know, some deals maybe you have a smaller, you know, depending on the deal and your relationship with the league, you might be able to get in a smaller amount. But some of those deals, you know, if you're doing one or two a year for 3 years or so, then you get, by the end of that, every year for a couple of years, we had a deal or two sell or refinance or some sort of capital event that we were able to then repurpose that into other opportunities. So it was about a, you know, roughly 50% increase in our net worth in that first 5 years that since we joined and started our investing journey.
All right, there's the music. Sounds like we've got to go. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back with the Del Walmsley Radio Show.
Hearing the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Got questions? Email Del at askdel@luinc.com. That's askdel@luinc.com. More life-changing wisdom when Del returns in moments.
When you're learning something new, experience matters. At Lifestyles Unlimited, we've spent over 30 years teaching people how real estate investing works and how to build income with a clear, step-by-step strategy. Our program is designed to help you learn what to do, why it works, and how to take action at your own pace. Join today for just $297, a 60% savings off the regular price. Text radio to 88007. That's RADIO to 88007. Presented by Lifestyles Unlimited.
You're hearing the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Want more life-changing knowledge? Access our podcast and listen on demand at lifestylesunlimited.com under the radio tab. Now your host, Del Walmsley.
Welcome back to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. With me here today on Tell Del Tuesday is Zach Elliott out of San Antonio. Zach, as we went to break, we got cut off, and I was bringing this all to a crescendo for that last segment of, hey, okay, 10 years now, what has happened to your net worth? You know, is a multiple of where you started to where you are now? Is it, you know, up 50%, 100%, 500%? You know, what is it?
Yeah, so I'm just over 100% now in the 10 years since I joined.
Okay, so you've doubled your net worth in 10 years.
Yes.
All right, excellent. Yep. At what point did you decide that you wanted to go out and be a lead investor yourself as opposed to the passive investor? And what changed your mind about that? Why? Why did it happen?
Well, I found it was kind of two things kind of happening at once. One is I found that I just had an interest in it as I got to form relationships with other lead investors, some that I had invested with. And they would, you know, they would give out monthly reports. And then when I'd see them at networking events, I'd ask them in more detail about a particular operational challenge or something they overcome in their business. And I found that I had an increasing interest in that. And then also at the same time, I had a realization that with my job that it had gone through several rounds of layoffs, that, you know, I had survived and that knew that the my company and just the business of being in the oil field, it was unlikely that I would continue in my career without getting laid off or having a job change or have to relocate because of company acquisition or something. And I didn't know that I knew I would not want to do that. I would not want to move my family. And so I was looking for something else, you know, that I didn't want to be doing that career forever. And so those kind of two forces were happening, you know, that had an interest in multifamily and learned that was something I was interested in and possibly pursuing, and then just kind of some frustrations in my job at the same time. And so that kind of started in 2018, and then I started the lead investor education and everything and led up to 2019 when we got our first property.
All right, I'm going to circle back to that in a second here on that first property, but inquiring minds want to know this. This has nothing to do with lifestyles or anything, but inquiring minds are bugging me right now to ask this question. That is, hey, the show Landman, you're in the oil field business. Is there any reality to the show Landman? Is there really stuff crazy like that going on out there? I know you're on the technical side of it as an engineer type thing, but you obviously you had to know where that's, you know, where the oil meets the ground, you know, type of thing. Mm-hmm. Is there any reality to that show?
I think some of it is exaggerated or fantasticized a little bit, but there are definitely, you know, I think more for smaller companies, maybe, you know, a large, big Fortune 500 company, it's quite similar to working for a big, any big company anywhere, you know, and they, if there are kind of exploratory things going on, then it's done quietly and more subtly, but so I think maybe elements of that Landman are true, but it definitely exaggerated and everything.
Well, the reason I ask is because it's really a show about entrepreneurialism and taking risk on that end of it. I mean, you can just see it all over the place, and just going to work for a living doesn't give them any jazz. They need to get out there and get some jazz. So here you are. You decided now you've been working, you've been investing, you've seen what can happen, how the gold and oil can come out of the ground for an entrepreneur. You decided to take it on yourself. What was the first deal you found that you liked, and what did you like about it?
Yeah, so we found a deal, a 29-unit in San Antonio that was in a good location to that kind of centrally located in the city, but to employment centers. And it was also unique in an area where there was not a lot of new, a desirable area where a lot of people wanted to live, because it's close to different employment centers, but also a place where they weren't building new properties right there in that area, because it was next to an older neighborhood in town that had historical protection, you know, so the homes that are a block away all have to be, they have a HOA and everything to get approved when you know, so I felt good in that the neighborhood was kind of being upheld by that, you know, that area. And so our property was just adjacent to it. And so, I like that, and I like that it had some just a good location, and it was an older property, but it had been maintained overall pretty well by the previous owners. So I wasn't interested in doing a huge value add play where it would be, or at least for my first deal, kind of wanted something more on the yield side, and so I like that I could do, you know, you needed some improvements, update the units to get some rent growth, but it wasn't a heavy value add lift to the exterior, and it was something that was about 20 minutes from our house. So with a smaller property, you know, 29 units, you can't have on-site staff all the time, but being nearby would give me a little bit more comfort that, you know, when we did need to get on the property, that we could get there pretty quickly if we needed to. And so kind of all of those things were things that I liked about that deal.
How many total deals have you been a lead in, and are they all in San Antonio?
They have all been in San Antonio, and I've done four now.
All right.
in San Antonio. The first two smaller properties we've sold. But
we've got the expo coming up here. It's going to be it's going to be March 12th is the bus tour, and then the expo is the 13th and the 14th. I assume you're going to be there, huh?
I will. Yep, I'll be there on that. There at the expo, looking forward to it. It's nice to not travel this time.
So are any of your properties on the road trip?
We will not be. We won't be getting back in town until that Thursday evening. We have already had prior spring break plans before the expo was scheduled, but I'll be there for Friday.
Okay, very good. I just wondered. For those of you that have not signed up for the bus tour yet, we're on our last bus. You need to get signed up before it fills up. I don't know what it was. I didn't check today. But I would definitely get signed up, because there can't be a lot of seats left. I've been talking about this for a week now. And if you want to get a seat, just text the word bus to 88007, 88007. The rest of you get in there, because it's important that you register for things. They sent me a deal yesterday. I'm going to take a second here, because we do have this thing coming up, to remind you that there's some things that run out. Like, for instance... We need to know how much food we're going to order. We need to know how many people are on the bus tours and bus seating. We have to print out complete brochures and manuals for this thing, and you know, which includes all the materials that you get at this thing. There's also the housing. There's only so much housing there available, you know, hotel rooms and so forth, and you need to get your hotel room before it runs out. So there are limitations to this stuff, and you need to get signed up for it. Otherwise, you could possibly miss out on this deal. All right, let's move on. So you did this small one, and how long before you were done with this one? And did you sell it before you moved on to the next one, or did you just pick up another one?
We picked up another one about a year and a half later in 2020, so had the two properties combined were like 84 units. So kind of operated those. It helped that I was able to get more staff, more full-time staff to cover the two properties, and operated both of those for several years.
Yeah, that's not a bad number. So if you had 29, that's 30, went to 84, so you picked up another 50-some units mm-hmm. after that. Now, put together, that actually does create enough for actually one staff, to be honest with you. But yeah. That must have changed everything for you, though, huh? Having somebody to do the day-to-day stuff?
Absolutely, yeah. It was great because then I could focus more on less of the hands-on and more of the managing and running the business. Look ahead at, you know, any kind of capital projects and focus more on that while the day-to-day was done by the maintenance guy and someone in the office. So it really helped out a lot.
What made you decide, and at what point did you decide to go do another deal?
So it was in second half of 2022 when I started looking for my third deal. And had on the horizon plans to sell the other two smaller properties. One had done really, really well. The other one, just based on the market conditions and everything, we decided to kind of execute our business plan a little bit early. And so was in the process of exiting the two smaller properties. And so, you know, I would have more time for another property. So was looking for and found a 120-unit property.
Okay. Did you get rid of the other two or just decide to keep all three of them?
So I had all three of them briefly, but we did sell the other two within the first 6 months or so of having the third property. So at that point, I was in the process of selling them, but had not, you know, actually done it yet when we got the third property. But within that first 6 months, sold the other two properties.
So you had two properties that added up to around 80-plus units, and you that were in separate locations. So you went from the economics of scale of a 29 unit to about 80 some units, which created the economics of scale for one property, but not together. So you had some distance there. And now you've moved to the economics scale of 120 unit apartment, all in one location. How much different did you find that in operating that way as opposed to the other way?
So initially I realized that the systems and processes I had fit great for each size. You know, when I had the one property, I had a kind of a process down, and then I had on-site staff and had to change it a little, you know, improve it a little further for having, you know, two other staff. And then when we got the third larger property, and each time, you know, you have to change how you're operating and your processes and everything as you grow. But also, I found with the larger properties, you know, your payroll and everything are a little bit larger, and you can it was easier to find better employees and staffing, you know, as you each time that I grew a little bit.
Did you wrap your arms around the economics of the scale? And what I mean by that is this. I'm just going to run people out there through this. You got 30 units. If you got 10% vacancy, you got 3 units. I got at least 3 units, okay? So if you got 10% vacancy, you know, you're just going to jump on 3 units, get it done. You've got 80, now you got 8 units vacant. You got 10% vacancy on 120, you got 12 units vacant. You can't use the same approach to doing the make-readies on 12 units as you do on 3 units. Would you agree to that?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think you learn how to work through people, you know, how to set your expectations and timing and what quality and everything that you want, and making sure that the vision you see in your head is clear to the staff that are executing it or the vendors that you hire. And it also helps as you get more units that you can use the same vendors more often, so they know that, oh, this is one of Zach's apartments. He likes these paint colors, and this is how they like it done. And as they do more units for you, the kind of they get into a good rhythm of giving you what you want. Whereas, you know, that first apartment, we may go months sometimes without turning a unit. You know, you're having to you don't have that rhythm and scale of they're always working for you. So it makes it easier when you're always working with somebody, any kind of team member, you know, whether it's an employee or a contractor. The more you work with them, the better things usually get. So with the scaling up really improves, and you get better processes and as you scale up and get more units.
So you're sliding into that better fitting shoe, as just to make up an analogy, and now you drop the other two. How did you do in the other two? You got rid of both of those. You make any money on those?
Yeah, so we had about a 30% return on the one smaller one. That's the one that we, you know, originally we went in with a 5-year plan, and then we voted to exit a little bit earlier, basically take a single or a double now versus waiting a couple of more years for the home run. And then on the other deal, we have more than doubled everybody's money in just like in about 2.5 years. So that one was phenomenally successful. So
at what point along this journey did you leave your job?
So after I got the 124 unit property, then I left my job at that point. And because we had enough units, but we also had, you know, other passive investments that we were in that helped as well.
What age was that?
So I was 40.
Okay. What about the people you were working with? What did they think? My God, you're quitting at 40? What does that mean?
Yeah. It was kind of it's kind of funny because trying to explain to folks what you're doing, you know, and they seem surprised. At that point, I was working as a contractor for the Air Force in fuels and pipeline project as a project engineer. And so some of the folks there had been, you know, spent most of they were 10 or 15 years older than me and had been grinding in that same industry or career path for, you know, 20, 30 years. And you're explaining to them that you're that you're going off on this entrepreneurial journey with your spouse. And they just, some of them, it just doesn't click. And then some also a little jealous, you know, that they just were not interested in taking the risk at that point in their life, I guess.
We only have 1 minute left. I don't want to miss out on this. What does the family think about you doing this? What has this done to your family dynamics?
It's great because I'm available to be with my kids and be involved, whether that's Cub Scouts, coaching baseball, picking them up to take them to events, go to their sporting events or dance events, whatever they have, and schedule my life and work around their activities. You know, the properties are all 20 minutes from where we live and their schools, so it's been a blessing because I have the flexibility to be involved with him.
Thanks for coming on today. I appreciate it. And for all you out there, if you want to meet Zach personally, he's going to be at the Expo, which is March 12th, 13th, and 14th in San Antonio, Texas. Let's not meet it. Text the word radio to 88007. And remember always, it's not the money, it's the lifestyle. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you for listening to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Want more of Del's unconventional wisdom? Go to lifestylesunlimited.com and click the radio tab. Listen to past shows, hear podcasts on demand, and find out how you can change your life today. The Del Walmsley Radio Show is part of the Lifestyles Unlimited Radio Network.
The information and opinions you hear on the Del Walmsley Radio Show are those of the host, Del Walmsley, his guests, and his callers, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Del Walmsley Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Del Walmsley Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.